Sunday, November 19th. Scott Frazier, Alyssa Walker. I'm Hayes Davenport. This is LA Podcast. Thank you for listening. Did you guys have a good week?
I had a decent week.
I'm gonna say no. I did not have a good week.
Not even.
Wait, what am I talking about?
Good.
I had a bad week. I forgot about it. It felt like 2 weeks
it felt
slammed
like,
together.
Yeah, I would say there were good and bad things. It was maybe the longest week that I've
long
had
week.
In a long time.
Yeah. Well, you had to cover, I'm sure, a lot of stuff. I know every journalist I talked to this week is kind of on the verge.
Well, it was like the election, and then, well, for some people, I had to cover that shooting, and then the next day was the fire, which continues.
Yeah.
And has gotten better, but there's also, we're starting to learn the magnitude of what happened both here and up north, which is incredibly just really difficult to deal with all day.
Yeah, the campfire was horrible. And it seems like the death toll is going to go up. We are recording this on Friday night, but it seems like it's going to continue to go up. In Malibu, I think there was one additional death.
So it would be three total.
So, like a very small fraction, it seems like, of what happened in Paradise, California. And also, we got away with it in terms of our air quality, which has been generally okay this week compared to San Francisco, which is like basically uninhabitable right now.
Yep.
Yeah.
Related to that, like, you know, this is like a luxury problem compared to what's happening in San Francisco. But this is my LA story from this week. I always forget every winter of how dry it gets and how, even though it's like 70 plus degrees outside when you're just like going around, my entire body is completely dried out. The chapping is crazy.
It's unbelievable.
And the static, you like take your shirt off at the end of the day and you're like, you can see yourself in the dark.
It's like St. Elmo's fire going on.
My poor cat, I'm like torturing my cats. I want to like pet my cats and I'm hurting them with
your sparks.
And so you can see, I mean, it's just so easy to see how in this weather, how easy it is to start like a fire. I mean, like if like you're just like surrounded with kindling and there's so much static in the air.
I'm going to be checking on each of your cats to make sure that they're okay before I leave.
What about you guys? What LA stories?
My LA story is pretty short this week. I think I just started. I'm trying to counteract the impact that daylight savings time has on me every year. Generally, like I wake up early, I do most of the things that I'm doing in the day, like right when I get up. I'm just one of those people, which my partner hates very much about me. And then when daylight savings time hits, I just can't wake up because the sun is down and I'm just, you know. So I'm trying to counteract that. I've been trying very hard to just like wake up, go in early to work so that I can just like workout or whatever. And
what are we talking about, like 6?
I wake up at 5.
Wow.
Get out the
you've
door.
Like texted some things or shared things that have been you're like on mom hours.
Wow.
That's really impressive.
Yeah, so it's a new thing. I don't know if it's gonna stick, but one of the things that I loved about that like coming into downtown LA that early is amazing because I can door to door be from my house to Pershing Square, where my office building is, in 15, 20 minutes, which is unbelievable.
On the bus. Yeah.
On the 2 on Sunset.
It's like if there were dedicated lanes, it might just be like
the whole road is a dedicated lane at that time.
It's, you know, so I just like have my hoodie on. I'm kind of like reenacting the start of 8 Mile.
Yeah.
Where my head is against the window. But just kind of nice getting
spreadsheets
to watch,
instead of rhymes.
Watch downtown LA sort of wake up as you know, the jewelry marts and everything get going, and I'm enjoying it. I'm gonna try and keep doing it, but
that's cool.
That is cool.
Yeah,
I like that.
What about you, Alyssa?
Well, I also wake up at that time, but for very different reasons. Yeah, this week was just a bummer. Like, I interviewed people who were affected by what happened in Malibu. I went to Malibu. And you're right. We're so lucky. I mean, or we're very skilled and amazing firefighting people. You know, we have these wonderful teams that really evacuated all these neighborhoods and got people out.
Yeah.
And people understood the magnitude of what was going to happen. So I think we were also just lucky and the weather cooperated, yep. But it could have been so much worse. And just going through there, just going up and down the PCH, you do see like places where the fire burned all the way to the water and the water was the only thing. I mean, I'm sure the firefighters like directed it that way when they knew there wasn't going to be anything there, just like go burn out. And then you saw people who had saved their homes with hoses and sprinklers and wading pool. You know, you saw yeah. all sorts of things like that. And then just people were just out there surfing, like had the city to themselves. And like just probably the first day that things felt like relatively normal.
Wow.
And there's still, they're starting to let people back in. Mm-hmm. Probably by this weekend, they'll have a lot more people back in and the fire is more than half contained. So I think not many more bad things will happen. We'll just start to learn more about like what was destroyed. They gave some tours of some of the properties, like the Park Service gave some tours of some of their properties in the Santa Monica Mountains, which has just recently became like a national parkland, is 88%. Burned,
oh
which is
my
just like
God,
I mean, if you can just imagine, yeah, it's like all the land is basically burned,
yeah,
which is not abnormal or you know sure. It's fine, but I did talk to somebody who studies fire at Pepperdine. I'm doing a story about Pepperdine that will be out by the time people hear this, but
about the sheltering in place,
yeah, which is actually like a really fascinating story about how the campus was designed for this and how okay. their policies have evolved over the years. But I met with a biology professor at the campus who talked about how when he first got there in 1974, the fire was every 20 years. That's the natural cycle. And now, do you want to take a guess at how frequently there's fire in the area?
And around Pepperdine?
Yeah.
Every 5 years?
7 years.
Wow.
Every 7 years. So it's not, so you say that it's like a natural thing and everybody likes to talk about, oh, it's actually fine. But humans are causing more of the fire.
Yeah, it's like how we have 100-year storms every like couple months.
It's not
months
even
now.
Just climate change. It's also just the ignition factor.
Right.
So it's like, yes, we're setting the stage and lengthening the fire season, but also just like more people around driving cars and powering up their houses means more chances for fire.
Yeah, we should say the Pepperdine thing was that the university president sheltered the student body on campus as some of the outbuildings on Pepperdine were being burned. It mm-hmm. seemed like that was a potentially very, you took some criticism for that.
Yeah, it looked scary to people who might have not known, but then you talk to all these alumni and there's been like a fire every 7 years and they're like, oh, I've been in 5 fires. We did this every time. It worked great. And they are actually serve as like an emergency operations center for the region. So it's not really like they don't, they're not going to let it burn down for that reason too. But it's just an amazing design story about how disaster preparedness and the way that you actually like site and plan a building and campus can make a big difference. And I think other places could probably learn from them, especially other places in Malibu.
Wow. So there was so much Malibu flavor in this fire, like the circumstances surrounding this fire. I saw Ben Oreskes of the LA Times reporting from a billionaire's yacht that was delivering supplies to people at the fire, and that they couldn't dock. So the surfers would paddle out and get the supplies and go back
in. But if anybody needs anything, I'm a journalist. I can come into you. Just let me know what you need. It was not that hard to get in. I think that was kind of more of a stunt, right? Like, are you joking? Like,
I saw a lot of community meetings where like people would talk and complain about how the crisis was being managed, and then someone like Pierce Brosnan got up to speak and said, "Please let us back into our homes." but he also said part of his speech I read was that he has seen so many fires in Malibu, but this was the worst one. But part of me is kind of like, why are you? if I lived in a place where I was able to say, I've seen, this is like, of the 7 or 8 fires that have threatened my home, this is the worst one, I just would not be there for the 8th.
I don't know. It was very, that's a troubling thing that I kept encountering, is this real steadfast belief that people should return and we're coming back and they're going to expedite permitting to get things rebuilt, and we'll follow up on this more. It's kind of insensitive to just report on it now, as we still don't know all the things that have, could be very wrong. But I think we'll follow up on a story next week, because it is problematic. It's a little, it's, if you're going to rebuild your house, like you said, 8 times or whatever, I mean, and historically it stretches back all the way to like the founding of the Malibu colony. Like
the people
who, like the billionaires now, of the time, who started Malibu, their houses burned down a bunch of times too. And then they just kept building new houses. So,
and not to kick the neighborhood while it's down, but, I think
the
you
city.
Can, sorry, the city, sorry. I think it tells you something about an area, how quickly after in a disaster they form amateur militias and threaten to murder anyone who comes onto their property.
Was that real? Was that?
It would be a weird thing to fake. I saw that Pink's husband, the motocross racer Corey Hart, immediately they had the like bandanas on and are like racking shotguns in case people come onto their property. I don't know. It was a little, and I don't know if any looting actually happened. I didn't hear about any, but maybe they would say, well, that's because our militias were roving the streets.
But is it like a looting of like Nobu? Like that's the thing. Like,
which is interesting, because apparently, we talked about how it's been open season on celebrities for the past several years anyway, where people are just robbing them left and right.
Yeah, that's right.
More dangerous now, I wouldn't think.
I mean, but as a lot of people have mentioned, this impacted communities outside of Malibu. There are some low-income communities inside of Malibu, and also like on the other side of the hill, these are a lot of communities. There's like senior retirement centers and all these, and mobile home communities and all these other communities that are not celebrities or wealthy. So just something to keep in mind. I think we will start to see some other negative impacts of this fire. Right. And of course the homelessness crisis, just wiping out 500 homes, helps that a lot too.
Yeah. Should we say a quick blessing for not getting HQ2 in Los Angeles?
A blessing.
We never talked about that.
There's the one good thing
should
that
we just
happened.
Throw
this
up
week?
A quick grace to
I'd like
God.
To throw up, actually, this process. I've been wanting to throw up throughout most of this. Amazon.
It is kind of a mixed blessing. Amazon, of course, as you've definitely heard by now, announced that they were going to split their headquarters too, that they had been holding a sweepstakes for in a kind of weird Willy Wonka scenario between Crystal City in the DC area and Long Island City in New York. And it's kind of a mixed blessing, just because now, like, the realization is hitting me that because it's in New York and DC, we're never going to stop this. Like, this cycle of this news is never going to end. Like,
right.
We're just going to hear about it forever.
God, the construction we're going to have here, all these complaints about.
I've already heard so much of the like internal working relationship of the New York governor and mayor with respect to this particular Amazon deal, that it makes me sick, like Alyssa was saying.
It's unfortunate for those places, but I think they could sustain that impact better than basically anywhere else.
As far as it pertains to Los Angeles, we, of course, had multiple bidding entities within the greater LA area.
Yep.
I think there was like Irvine was one.
Irvine.
Ontario, I want to say. There was the Valley.
In the city, Bob Blumenfield in Council District 3 really wanted Amazon to move into Warner Center.
Yep.
Kind of a office park up there.
the office park heart of the valley.
Yes, that's right.
Just north of
the office park.
The just north of the Sepulveda Pass.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of question about whether or not Los Angeles could, I think rightfully there was questioning about whether or not Los Angeles could handle 25,000 high paying jobs being just airdropped into the Western Valley. We're very lucky that we didn't get this.
It would have been really damaging.
The site of our, to be fair, our city leaders, to a much lesser extent than other places, were very eager to get Amazon's ear, get them into the LA market. There was a lot less of the desperate groveling that we saw from so many other cities.
No offers by our mayor to change his name to the name of a company like they got in New York.
Pour one out for Amazon Cuomo. That is the saddest thing I've ever heard.
And he must have known at that point that they were going to get it because it was like the day before that
it's been leaked forever. It's been leaked for months.
So it's like you don't need to keep making embarrassing offers.
I think we didn't like fawn too much, which was good. Like LA was just kind of like whatevs. Like if we get it, we get it. I mean, I don't think anybody was naming their child
Jeff Bezos. Right. And so many other really embarrassing offers came out from other cities. But it doesn't seem like LA really put its back into it.
We did kind of the same thing that we did for the Olympics. It was very similar in the sense that we were saying, look at what we're already building. We don't have to engage in a whole new spending spree, which I think I would disagree with. Like we should probably be not for Amazon, but for like people who actually live here, we should probably be spending more on social services and transportation and things like that. But that was roughly the same bit as what we did for the Olympics. And I think that we are the hope that Amazon or any other single company is going to come in and cause a significant increase of the quality of the political decision making in any city is beyond explanation. It's never going to happen. The desperate grabbing for cash tax revenue from new sources. If the fundamental decision making is bad and that's why you're looking for Amazon to come there, it's going to continue to be bad once they get there, if not worse.
You see how deferential the city is to the one billionaire astronaut that we currently have living here. I don't think we needed to necessarily.
Nope, I would agree with that.
Big Huizar news. Jose Huizar living in the headlines. After his office was raided by the FBI last week, this week he stepped down / was gently helped down from all of his committee positions.
The way I heard it was, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but he just didn't show up.
Yeah, he missed enough meetings.
Yes.
And then Herb Wesson stripped him of his committee assignments.
Yeah. Yes.
And then his office, when I imagine that his office is a little bit hectic right now.
Well, I can tell you it's actually not that hectic because it is locked.
Oh, right.
So LA Times reporters were going to try and see what's going on. And the door is locked. I believe there's nothing going on in there.
But when reached for comment, from Blue Bottle, I guess, I don't know, the representative of
WeWork,
of his office said that he would be back at work next week. So I didn't even get that there was an actual like stepping down that was happening. I thought it was just like it was stripped from him. And
well, yeah, but I think it wouldn't be stripped from him for not showing up for a few days.
Oh, sure. No,
it was stripped for him in anticipation of like the other shoe dropping with something really bad. And obviously
but he seems to think he's going to be back, which is what we generally hear right before, you don't come back.
I mean, we, you know, obviously have been hearing a lot of things. It's all pretty bad. It seems like we are looking at potentially another seat opening up on the city council potentially very soon.
Yep.
I think he might come back to deliver a brief farewell. And if you're going to do it, the time to do it would be Thanksgiving week, when it's like no one is paying as close attention.
And the journalists are all really tired from covering all these others.
None of the other council members who have departed midterm without even, as far as I'm aware, a cloud hanging over their head. None of them have given a farewell address. They've kind of just been like,
that's right.
Effective immediately, I'm gone. I'm sorry, you have no representation. Goodbye.
Jose Huizar, an underrated aspect of this is he could potentially beat Mitch Englander out the door. It's a real tortoise and the hare situation. What if he takes that job, the Olympic lobbyist job, before Englander can get it?
Wow, yeah. They're going to have an all-star team. Yeah. It's going to be like... the Monstars.
So there's a lot of fallout from already Huizar, yep, being taken off these committees. He was the head of the Plum Committee,
right?
Which is the Planning and Land Use Management Committee, and it is a plum position. It is a very influential job.
Yeah.
And I mean probably the most important committee that the council operates. Wouldn't you agree?
I would. And it's as we've noted before, Huizar is in CD14, which is the most development centric district by far in the city. It contains downtown. Obviously, there's a ton of activity there and has been since the previous recession and before. But Huizar has been one of the more pro-development voices on the council. One of, I would say, a small minority of council members who are supportive of new mixed-use residential projects, mm-hmm, going up throughout his district. So it is interesting to think about what could be potentially changing with the turnover at Plum. And now it's going to be chaired. Is this official by Marquise Harris Dawson?
Yeah, I think Alyssa, you sent us that earlier today.
Yeah, I think Emily Alpert Reyes reported on that, or maybe was there when they just had the meeting. And then the one thing they were discussing this week was Airbnb regulations, which has been something that the council that cannot,
yeah,
no,
kicking the can down the road.
On, I mean, or yeah. I don't know what the, I mean, I'm sure they're got their own reasons for delaying it, but like, can we just figure this out? Like, get on with our lives.
Mm-hmm. So the particular issue with the Airbnb regulations is that there's been some back and forth on the council recently about whether or not Airbnb rentals, short-term rentals, should be allowed in rent-stabilized units, right?
Yes.
And so the pro-con there is basically, is this an economic opportunity for renters who live in stabilized units? Or is it going to lead to more renters who can't afford market rate housing being turned over and their units being turned into short-term hotels?
Yeah. And Jose Huizar had supported banning Airbnb in rent-stabilized units, but Marquise Harris Dawson from Council District 8 is he's a little more hedgy on that.
Right.
And I know there have been a lot of like in between policies that have been like raised as this discussion, like you're saying, Alyssa, has been going on for, I mean, how many years now?
I mean, I feel like they introduced like the conversation over a year ago. I mean, this like draft regulations.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
It's been
going on for, I would say, multiple years at this point. And I think from a district perspective, it makes some sense to me that that Huizar would be more in favor of the restrictions, given that there is a lot of new construction in his district. There are a lot of adaptive reuse buildings that are not covered by the RSO. It is probably somewhat easier for him to take that stance and either be a hardliner against Airbnb in general with the number of hotel rooms that his district contains, or to just say like it doesn't really affect the renters that are in his district.
Yeah,
mostly. Mm-hmm. Whereas for Marquise Harris Dawson, I think that I can see that economic argument of it being a way for like, say, a family that owns a single property, a duplex that they want to turn into an Airbnb rental. I think that that makes sense, that that plays rather well in CD8, which covers portions of South LA. So that mm-hmm. that is my speculation about mm-hmm. how that that disagreement breaks down. Yeah. But definitely could be a change at the Plum Committee.
Let's talk about train names. This has been a conversation that's been going on this week. There was another big event downtown. Are these like big conferences just like happening constantly? And now I'm only more aware of them because I hang out with you, Alyssa.
It's because this year all these really major transportation and urbanism conferences just happened to be in LA.
Oh,
so we had a string of them, and then the most recent one. Are you talking about LA Commotion?
LA Commotion.
That this is a new festival for LA. This is the second year that it's been here. So okay. That one's always going to be here. But it was cool that National League of Cities and NACTO were both in LA. But those are like national conferences. Right. But so it's not your imagination. But okay. We're also very special. Yeah.
You, of course, hosted a panel at LA Commotion.
I did.
The consummate panel host. This was a big one with Christopher Hawthorne, the former LA Times architecture critic, now chief design officer of LA, Salita Reynolds, who manages LADOT, and the CEO of Metro, Phil Washington. But you didn't talk about what they're going to name the new train lines.
We didn't, but it was a topic of conversation at the conference today and yesterday. And I almost wish there would have been some kind of like board up or something where people could leave their suggestions, because yes. It would have just been it would have been just the perfect audience to nerd out over this. So I want Scott to explain this whole
what's the debate. I mean, right now
it's
because I'm forcing people to talk about this on Twitter.
But I mean, I think it is like it is a big deal, and they do need to make the decisions, but I also don't really understand a lot of the reasoning.
So the short version of what's happening here is that as our rail network grows, Metro has been trying to determine whether or not they should stick with the current naming strategy, which is a mix of like colors, red line, and then you have like corridor names like Expo Line, and we're going to add to that the Crenshaw Line and mm-hmm. various other things over the coming years. So they've been looking at trying to rename things, as we mentioned in a previous episode, based on either numbers or letters. Mm-hmm. So they just came back and said letters are better. They did a study that showed that people found that numbers could be potentially, I find this kind of hard to believe, confused with freeways. So
if that did happen, it would be a huge problem for whoever it would be whoever that
if you were in
to.
7th and Metro downtown, and someone asked you for directions, and you were like, you want to take the 2, and they were like, but that's a freeway. What are you talking about?
I guess I better go do it.
They would have a hell of a time accomplishing that. And also, it just doesn't make that much sense. But anyway, so the consensus among staff and apparently the board, who just voted on this week, was that they want to go ahead with the plan to rename all of our lines with letter designators and unique colors.
It makes a little more sense to me with the bus thing, because like take the 2 to the 2 was like a little more confusing.
It does make sense. In that sense, we do have, of course, multiple 2s. There's the big blue bus 2,
yes,
and the Metro
right.
2 already, and they operate in the same exact
they've
part
managed
of town.
Not to get confused about witches.
People
which
seem,
is which.
People seem to be doing okay. Anyway, it's okay. The interesting thing about this and what I was really confused about is that if you look at New York, which also has letter designators mm-hmm. for its lines, they use a lot of them, like 16 or 17 letters, A, B, C, D, E, F, you know, like they go through pretty much everything and only leave out a handful of letters that could easily be confused with other international signifiers.
Right.
Where LA is looking at this, if you look at the map that they've put out, the conceptual map of where we want to be by 2028, they've pretty much already eliminated 10 letters. There are only 26 letters, and they are cutting them out at a just breakneck speed for a number of reasons.
Yeah, what letters have they eliminated?
So H is out because H is the hospital.
Yeah, I don't get that
sign. That one is somewhat defensible.
I see. If you're like a tourist or something and you see an H, you are trying to go to the hospital and you end up on a subway, I guess that would be a
H
problem.
This way, yeah. Yes. I don't know. I don't even know if that's what it would say or if it would just be like a metro sign. But
okay,
all right, that one we're okay with.
Information
and I because of the lowercase L confusion thing or
it looks too much like yes, one potentially, maybe yeah. Let's just make up reasons.
But
okay.
I definitely information. P, parking.
Okay,
probably you're only going to get one of either U or V, and then O is also not on their list of letters that they're using. So it's
because
like,
it would look like zero,
I guess. That is speculation that somebody
and you
posted
and V look too much like each other.
Yes.
Or maybe Q and O look too similar, right?
Potentially. So whatever we're at, like we've gotten rid of a bunch
right.
of letters
already. And also
Sheila
Kuehl is concerned about...
Yes, this is my favorite.
About the orange line in her district being renamed the F line. She considers that a disrespectful letter.
She also said that she didn't like that one of the conceptual colors was brown.
Wow. She is really...
Sheila Kuehl, of course.
One-track mind here.
The chairwoman of the Metro board. But yes, she said that she didn't like that the Metro Orange Line, which is a bus and not a train, would be named the F line because the connotation would be
like F that line.
What she actually said was we use F to designate failure. And because it's a bus
okay.
and not
okay,
a train.
That's not
and
what then, came to mind at first for me. But it's also the most successful bus rapid transit line in the country. Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I think that the other connotation of it being the fuck line was also there. I'm not sure. I think that was tangentially
oh, like it would
up.
Turn into like a porn bus or
yeah,
something like that?
Yeah, they're concerned right. with too much ridership.
So what happens on the brown line?
I don't know. But
which
anyway.
Is also for the busway, now that I'm looking at this, right? So that
That's
would
right.
be the new proposed. I mean, one thing is, why are we naming our busways like the rail? Can we give the busways like different names?
They
like,
should probably have a different name.
Yeah,
it's a substantially
that,
different
I would
service.
Say is confusing to people who, not that it matters, but I've heard people are like, I went to take the orange line. I didn't know where it was because all I saw was a bus.
It was a bus. I'm waiting
it's
for
very confusing
like a
for
light
people.
Rail at least. And then a bus showed up.
Yeah. I mean, I think
but they
that's
do
one
that in Boston.
Solved.
Boston's all color coded and the rapid bus lines are colors too.
I wonder about this discussion because it's like this is the plan, right? Is that we're going to use letters, so given that we are using letters, I think we all know that letters are the first character of words and that's somewhat unavoidably baked into using letters.
Yeah.
If we don't want to use letters, we should probably pick a different designator.
And here's what's annoying about some of their choices. I know this is just a conceptual map and they haven't decided yet, but the C line is the Crenshaw line,
yeah,
which does not interact with the C.
What I want
to,
okay.
They should name the Expo line that, but they have changed that to the E line.
Which it already has an E for no real reason other than that the blue colors are very similar to the blue line.
Then they completely take away.
Oh, I forgot another letter that we're missing that I can't even account for. J.
J's just God.
The J. The smoking J line.
Too much J's. That one would be green. I was really in favor of leaving the colors and coming up with some really interesting color names like the pink line. I mean, I don't know. I thought that was really cool. It would make us different. I understand that it's not the best for, you know, other people that come to visit here or aren't, you know, don't use our characters. This is really troubling me.
I just want to know what's next. What letter is the next one to fall?
Well, I think our proposal is pretty clear. Don't name the busways the letters. Name them just what they are or something else. Mm-hmm. That could continue to be like the Orange Line busway or whatever.
Sure.
But then, I mean, also the freeway thing, the confusion with freeways and buses, then why do we have buses that are named two when there's a two freeway? Isn't that confusing? Like,
I do tell people to take the two bus and no one has ever run onto the freeway.
As long as we're changing these things, I do think it is confusing that they named the bus line the Orange Line, which is the color of every other bus in the city.
And those buses
for the red ones.
And those buses are silver. Those buses aren't even orange.
Yes. So at least color the buses the color of the line and make it different from all the other buses.
I was on the blue line with a colleague of mine who had never ridden the trains here before and had the remarkable experience of seeing the system through his eyes as a train that was painted gold on the front came up, and it had the color on the sign of the Expo line, and it said Blue Line Long Beach. He was like, and he didn't even look at that. He was just like, this is the gold line, right? I was like, no, this is, I think, a blue line train. But
you've just pointed out that the color thing might be problematic. But I also just look at this and it's like, I can just see like letters being like New York City. I look at that A and it's just like, it's the same color as the A.
It is.
Yeah.
And that I the A train, that's what bothers me.
At the next board meeting, if Jay had to go because of joint, then we're going to get some comment about D for doobie. That's my prediction.
Or the D train has other connotations as well.
It's true.
Guys, we got a blue wave on our hands.
Oh my God, yeah.
I got to strap on my knee pads really fast because I have to beg forgiveness, get on my knees and beg, apologize for throwing dirt on both Katie Porter in District 45 in Orange County and Gil Cisneros. I was so eager to confirm my existing biases. I thought that I wanted Katie Porter to have lost because she didn't want her to lose. But I wanted to say, oh, because she sold out on Prop 6. Should have listened to me.
Yep.
And I thought Gil Cisneros was not a great candidate. They are both going to win by the end of this. I think the margins are going to be pretty huge.
Pretty large.
Katie Porter's already walking away with it against Mimi Walters, and Gil Cisneros got a huge lead extension from LA County today. So all of Orange County is now blue. Assembly seats are flipping like crazy all over. Like, we can't even keep track of these things that are going so fast.
You were in very good company looking at the returns and saying, this candidate wasn't good. They should have been more like my desired.
Everybody did that.
And a lot of people called a lot of races wrong, particularly in California, as we're still seeing things flip here. I think it's worth noting about the Cisneros race that Young Kim, who a lot of conservative media outlets were calling as the first Korean American woman to be elected to Congress.
Yeah. And some calling the first Asian woman or Asian person to be elected to Congress, which is just not properly fact checked.
was Mimi Walters, but she's not in LA County. Right. Young Kim was questioning the results of her election, the more recent vote counts that have come in, as we know, as we've mentioned, tend to favor Democrats the later they come in. But she was saying, her camp was saying, that they expect that the votes that come in after election night should be proportionally similar to the ones that were received on election night, at which point in time she was, of course, winning. And then it's gotten worse for her in the past couple of days. And so now she is impugning the integrity of the election without, I think LA Times reached out to her for comment, and she did not, she declined to back up her assertion that this count was rigged against her somehow. I have to say, like, even though this is the tiniest sliver of LA County right now that we're discussing, it is extremely disturbing to me that any candidate for a federal office in California is engaging in this, in this rhetoric with no factual basis, with no even desire to appeal to fact.
Especially one like Young Kim, who never really touched Trump over the whole campaign, like didn't want to get involved in that at all, ran as like a sensible, like moderate conservative. It's incredibly bleak, but it also feels like both of them are just kind of doing it, A, to fundraise, just to get a last little like cash infusion. Mimi Walters was asking for money for what? She says, like, now they're already planning a recount. And it's like, no, they're not. They're winning. Like, the last thing they want is a recount. But I don't know. I mean, like, it seems a little, it's half-hearted compared to what's going kind of this,
in Florida.
This, like, this like obligatory thing now.
That's bad. That should not be. That should not be something that is allowed to set in. But I guess what can you do?
But let's talk about the state. What kind of margins are we going to be looking at the end of this?
For the Senate, I think we're tracking to 28 or 29 Democratic senators, which is one or two over the supermajority threshold for the 40 members there. For the Assembly, it is an absolutely astonishing majority that is probably going to end up being 60 Democratic members, so 75% of the constitution of that body.
Unbelievable.
Or potentially 61 in Assembly District 77. Mayenchein is in deep trouble, I think.
And there are lots of pretty institutional Republicans, Matthew Harper and Huntington Beach, places that I'm sure we're not expecting to be threatened this election, and are all getting washed away.
To my knowledge, and based on a quick Wikipedia search, apparently that would be the 60, even 60 Democratic votes in the Assembly. That would be the first time that that had happened since 1883.
Oh my God.
And the first time that that would have happened for that wide of a margin would have existed in the Assembly in either party since the immediate aftermath of the Great Depression. So,
the California GOP is dead.
If the Republican Party thought that it could not get worse this year, like this year couldn't be worse than subsequent years for them, they were very wrong. There were stories that actually came out that were like looking at their election night events where they were kind of like laughing and like, you know, they were cheering on results in other states, but they were mostly just thinking of themselves as playing the spoiler in California. It turns out they don't actually have sufficient clout in the state to play the spoiler. That is beyond
their reach. They can't even do that anymore. They're completely non-factors now.
They are
completely
non-factors.
Well, now Carl DeMeo has so many more opportunities to run individual recall races.
Yep.
More than he's ever had before. Prop 6, God, what an unbelievable failure that was. So what now with like this giant majority?
What can we do?
What can we do?
What can we do? I think the housing stuff, maybe this will ensure the passage of a smarter SB827, and won't have pushback from the side of the wealthy homeowners that don't want taller buildings. people, although I feel like
that's going to happen no matter what. I think
that's unavoidable.
What you don't want pushback from is social justice activists.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, well, I think, but then once I said that, I realized like it's probably more rural communities that have the representation that's still GOP, right? There's no like urban representation that's.
It's basically rural, and even then, only sometimes.
Yeah,
like, there was one seat in like Contra Costa and like the Bay Area that was red, and that went down today.
So,
and you would actually probably get some Republican votes on a liberalizing bill like the deregulations in 827,
right?
If it were not targeted at their district, I think there was some kind of.
So I guess the bigger thing is it's like it's going to be, it probably already was, but there'll be much more of an urban rural divide maybe in some of these conversations. It'll be more stark, but the housing thing, it cuts across both of those. You know, everybody has a housing deficit. Like it's not really exclusively an urban problem. SB 827 was maybe. It's too so focused around transportation that it rang that way, resonated that way, because people thought it was about like rail lines. And if my city didn't have one, you know, it only affected like a few places in like smaller cities. But like just doing something to get more housing is something that probably everybody could agree on, right? Even with a supermajority.
I don't think it's going to be housing. That we see movement on first, personally. I mean, I could very well be wrong. My thought would be Newsom laid out a variety of things in his stump speech. Most detailed among those was increasing family leave benefits and universal pre-K.
Yeah, they seem really loaded up for that one.
And that seems like something that is extremely popular with incoming state legislators. I don't see there being nearly the type of pushback on that you have on housing measures or even homelessness measures, which everybody agrees that we need to do something on, but people don't agree on exactly what to do besides just dump money into a black hole.
Right.
But I think it's important to keep in sight that I think I've seen a lot of people being very cynical about the importance of supermajorities in the California state legislature, because typically speaking, neither house of the legislature as a whole has been very reluctant to veto the governor. It happens extremely infrequently that a gubernatorial veto is overridden. However, we are losing in Jerry Brown the most experienced lawmaker in the history of the state
world.
House.
The world.
And we're replacing him with Gavin Newsom, who is untested. And I believe that it is entirely possible that the legislature will try to make a run at him and exert some sort of influence over him. And also if there is a 61 seat Democratic majority in the assembly, that is 7 votes above the required supermajority threshold to pass new revenue sources. That is staggering.
That's a huge cushion. People don't even have to show up for work.
The assembly has been by far the more moderate, the more right-leaning of the two two state houses. And so just like having that cushion, like you said, allowing members to sit out hard votes on things like healthcare or housing could potentially make an enormous difference. Mm-hmm. Senate has already proven that they're willing to use their supermajority that way.
We won't have so many ballot measures to vote on because they'll actually get things decided and approved on.
Or maybe they'll pass more things in the legislature that they will be sued for and have to then put those things on the ballot.
So, but revenue things like you're talking about, so things like SB1, like the gas tax, right? So we could maybe institute these other maybe driving deterrent type things, climate related type things. A lot of these things that we've been talking about to achieve those goals. That would be good.
The state to allow congestion pricing, which I, as far as I'm aware, is not.
That was one of Scott Wiener's things that he talked about.
Legal. But
he's going to introduce something this year, and it would legalize it in San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Santa Monica. And I just love saying that, that Santa Monica is going to have to fight through this with their, I'm sure since Santa Monica passed that like anti-density thing with their supermajority, yeah, in regards to supermajority, they're going to love that. But yeah, that's a great example. And that's something that could happen and should happen. And today on the, my panel with Phil Washington from Metro, he was like, this is a priority for me, which was really good to hear. Yeah.
We've also got a new sheriff. I'm calling it. I'm calling the race.
You're calling it
the
now.
The official LA podcast call is in.
We got a new sheriff in town.
Yes.
I've been waiting to say that.
The margin is now way bigger than the number of hits that the LA podcast voter guide got. So I think we could officially defer responsibility for this happening, which I did not want anyway. And then I saw that a panel like the sheriff's oversight panel today recommended getting ICE out of the jail. So
where have they been?
It is a little late for that. Thank you for listening to LA Podcast. We will be back next week after we have Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to all of our listeners, and see you next Monday. Bye.
LA Podcast. LA Podcast. LA Podcast gonna have